I've learned a lot of things from the presentations that I've seen so far, and the first thing I learned was that I forgot my financial disclosure slide. So let me just tell you, I have no financial disclosures to make. And I would like to acknowledge my co-authors, Patricia Dittus, Emily Chung, Steve Martinez, Kathy Wong, Kathleen Ethier, and Peter Kern. There are a lot of definitions of what sexual minority means. One thing that the definitions have in common is that sexual minority individuals are anyone who is not exclusively heterosexual. And the frequency with which this occurs is not very clear, especially in school-based samples. There have been studies done that have reported ranges going from about 3.9% of all high school students to about 9.2%, and probably the range varies based on definition. What we do know is that attraction to both genders occurs more commonly than attraction to only the same gender in youth, that most engage in sexual activity with the opposite sex at some point, and so sexual identity in adolescence can be fairly fluent. And research is typically grouped together those who report any same-sex attraction or behavior, but homosexual and bisexual youth report very different behavior. So if we really want to see the differences, we need to separate these two groups out. So we've heard a lot about this, but for in-school youth, environmental factors are different. Sexual minority youth are subject to harassment and discrimination within schools. They are frequently within a hostile school climate. Sometimes the harassment and discrimination can come from their own family. They frequently suffer disrupted relationships with families and peers, and are at increased risk of sexual abuse, increased risk for running away, being kicked out of their homes. They're overrepresented in homeless samples of youth, and homeless samples of youth have lots of sex workers, and so they tend to be more frequently involved in that. As a result, they have a unique set of health and behavioral risks. Sexual minority youth are more frequently truant and more at risk of dropping out of school. We just saw about depression. Suicidality is also more common, substance abuse. There's increased sexual risk behavior. And you're probably familiar with increased STD risk, but kind of counterintuitively, sexual minority youth are actually at higher risk of pregnancy involvement. Studies of sexual minority youth have shown that actually sexual minority youth are more likely to report pregnancy involvement. There's a population-based study of in-school youth that found that bisexual and lesbian girls were equally as likely as heterosexual girls to report sexual activity, but significantly more likely to report pregnancy. We also know that the rate of teen pregnancy has increased among sexual minority youth over the 1990s, contemporaneously with the decrease among the general population of youth. A study of teen fathers showed that one-third of them reported both gender or same-gender sex partners. Higher hepatitis B and hepatitis C seromarkers have been found among same-sex attracted females. And sexual minority youth frequently report multiple and higher risk partners, and especially in school populations are less likely to use contraception and more likely to use less effective contraception. So what this tells us is that the reproductive health care needs of sexual minority youth in school are unique. So what we wanted to do is, within our school-based sample, we looked at the sexually experienced high school students, and we wanted to look at differences according to the gender of the sex partners that they reported for behavioral risk for STD and pregnancy, history of STD and pregnancy, receipt of reproductive health care. We also wanted to look at gender differences. Are boys and girls different in terms of risk behavior, history of STD and pregnancy, and receipt of care? Oops, sorry about that. Okay, so the data were collected at 12 public high schools in the LA area. These were collected at baseline for a teen pregnancy and STD prevention intervention study. We selected participants in grades 9 through 12 by grade, randomly selected by classroom from classrooms that in subjects that all students had to take. Like, for example, in ninth grade, we used health and life skills classes. They did a 30-minute self-administered survey in one class period, and we required active parental consent and youth assent for participation. Demographic variables included age, grade, gender, and ethnicity. With respect to sexual activity, we asked them if they had ever had sexual intercourse, oral sex, or anal sex. If they said yes to any of those, we classified them as sexually experienced or sexually active. We asked them about the gender of their sex partners, which is actually our measure of sexual minority status. We don't have a self-report measure, so this is based all on the gender of the partners that they reported. We asked them how old they were the first time they had sexual intercourse, how many partners they had had sexual intercourse with, if they had newer casual partners, if they used condoms at last intercourse. We also asked them if they were sexually active in the last 3 months, how frequently they used condoms, and the results were the same, so I don't report them here. We asked them if they ever experienced or caused a pregnancy or had an STD, and we know from the schools whether or not there's a school-based health center in the school. With respect to receiving reproductive health care, if they said yes to any of the following questions, we said that they had received reproductive health care, and this was ever. So we asked if a doctor or nurse had ever given them birth control, had ever given them a pregnancy test, or their partner, and that really was intended for boys, but obviously could work for females as well. We asked if anyone had talked to them about preventing pregnancy, so had they been counseled to reduce pregnancy and STDs? Had they ever been tested for STD? Had they ever been tested for HIV? Data analyses consisted of a lot of 2x3 chi-square analyses because we have a three-level sexuality variable, sexual identity, basically. Analysis of variance for continuous outcomes, stepwise logistic regression we used to identify the associated variables and then confirmed it with a multivariable logistic regression. So a little more than half of our sample was female. Ethnicity is predominantly Latino, with our next biggest subgroup is African American. The other three groups, well, we actually had more groups than this, but they were reported in such small numbers and were mixed enough that we had to group them into another category for this analysis. As you can see by the grade level, that's not exactly the way we recruited them. The kids are sexually active, so about 66% of them were in 11th or 12th grade because the older kids are more likely to be sexually active. Okay, I gotta catch up with myself here. Okay, when we look at the gender of the sex partners, the question we asked was, have your sex partners been all males, males and females, or all females? The girls were significantly more likely to report partners of both genders as compared to the males. But what we see is that the vast majority report only opposite sex partners. 2.5% of the boys reported same-sex partners only, as compared to 1.4% of the girls, and 2% of the boys reported both gender partners as opposed to 6% of the girls. And these numbers are fairly small. So the boys that reported same-sex partners, there were 31 boys and 26 that reported both gender partners. And for the girls, it was 19 girls that reported exclusively same-gender partners, but 84 reported partners of both genders. So overall, there's about 1,200 in each gender group. And now remember, these kids are in this sample because they said they ever had oral sex, sexual intercourse, or anal sex. So of this group, 90% had ever had sexual intercourse, and there was no difference by the gender of the partners. 76% reported having oral sex, and the only difference by gender of the partners was for females who reported both gender partners, and they were more likely to say they had had oral sex than females with only same gender partners or only opposite gender partners. Overall in the sample, 18% reported ever having had anal sex. And clearly males with same and both gender partners were more likely to have experienced anal sex. Both those groups, 62% said they had ever had anal sex versus 18% of the boys that only had opposite gender partners. There were no differences in girls, but 25% of the females that had both gender partners did report having anal sex. That's one out of four girls. So when we look at age of first intercourse by the gender of the partners, we do see that there is a difference in that sexual minority students tended to start to initiate sexual intercourse at an earlier age. So looking at the boys with opposite sex partners only, and the boys with same-sex partners only were closer to 15 years old when they started having sex, but the boys with both gender partners were around 13 years old when they started having sex. And again, this question was sexual intercourse. For the girls who are reporting same-gender partners only, we don't really know what they mean by sexual intercourse, so I'm going to ask you to take that one with a grain of salt. But what we do see is that the girls with opposite-sex partners only were more than 15 and a half years old, and the girls with both gender partners were about a year younger when they first started having sexual intercourse. Okay, and then we asked a bunch of questions about their sex partners. So we asked them how many sex partners you ever had, was your last partner a casual partner, a steady partner, and have you had a new partner in the last 3 months? And so among the male participants, what we see is that the sexual minority males were more likely to report four or more lifetime partners than the males who only had opposite gender partners. They had about 25% of them said that they had four or more lifetime partners versus if you look at the boys that had both gender partners, 57% of them had had four or more lifetime partners. It's a similar pattern for females, except that it's only the females that report both gender partners that are significantly different from the females that report opposite-only partners, and the numbers are overall lower than for the boys. Again, we see a same pattern with whether or not their last partner was a casual partner. So the boys who report same gender only partners and both gender partners were 57% to 59% of them reported that their last partner was casual versus 39% of the boys with only opposite sex partners, and a similar pattern with females, although again the significance level is different. We do see also that boys with both gender partners were significantly more likely to report a new partner in the last 3 months compared to the boys who only had opposite sex partners, but not compared to the boys who only had same gender partners. And there was no relationship on that variable for females by gender of the partners. When we ask them about condom use, what we see is with our group that has opposite sex only partners, that's a fairly standard finding that girls are less likely to use condoms than boys. For same gender only partners, again, I need you to take that the bar for girls with a grain of salt because we don't really know what they're talking about there. But what we see is with the respondents, the males who reported partners of both genders, they're much less likely to have used a condom the last time they had sexual intercourse. And we asked them about pregnancy and STD. And overall, in the entire sample, 7% reported that they had ever been pregnant or caused a pregnancy. And these percentages were 5% for males and 9% for females. Pregnancy was related to gender of partners in the overall sample. So in the overall sample, the respondents that had partners of both genders were more likely to report pregnancy than those with opposite sex partners only and those with same sex partners only. And those differences were, so 12.5% of the kids that reported both gender partners also reported involvement in a pregnancy. And then very few reported being told that they had an STD. It was about 2% overall, 1% of boys and 3% of females, and there was no difference by gender of the partners. So there's probably no difference and no relationship in this because the numbers were so low for that. Okay, now turning to reproductive health care. Okay, I have my overall statistics here. About 57% reported that they'd ever received reproductive health care, and as you would expect, this differed by gender. So boys were less likely to receive reproductive health care than girls. About 60% of females overall and about 41% of males overall said they ever received reproductive health care. But what we do see is a significant gender by gender of the sex partner interaction, such that having partners of both genders was related to receiving reproductive health care for females, but not for males. So when we looked in our multivariate model of what predicted receiving health care among females, the variables that came up significant were, first of all, having partners of both genders as compared to having only opposite sex partners. So girls that had partners of both genders were twice as likely to have received reproductive health care as were girls who only had opposite sex partners. Girls who had same-sex partners only were no different than girls with only opposite sex partners. African American girls were more likely to receive reproductive health care, which is a fairly common finding. In our area, we were more likely than Latino girls, Latinas, to receive reproductive health care, and the other ethnic group was equally likely with the Latinas to receive reproductive health care. As grade increased, so for every increment increase in grade, there was about a 29% increase in the risk or in the odds of having received reproductive health care. The girls that had four or more sex partners were twice as likely to have received reproductive health care. Girls that were ever pregnant were almost six times as likely to have received reproductive health care, which makes a lot of sense. It doesn't wash out the other variables, though, so the other variables are adjusted for that. And then girls that were in a school with a teen health center were about 50% is more likely to have received reproductive health care. So that's a nice finding for our school district. I don't have a slide like this for males because there was nothing that really predicted whether or not they had ever had reproductive health care except for having four or more partners. So we find that basically across the board, boys are less likely to have received reproductive health care than girls. So to go back over, the things that we can conclude from this were the sexually active male and female adolescents who had partners of both genders also reported more sexual risk. They were younger the first time they had sexual intercourse. They had more sex partners or were more likely to report a casual partner or a new partner. And for boys, they were less likely to use condoms. For females, reporting partners of both genders, in addition to maybe increasing their risk behavior or affecting their risk behavior, let's put it that way, that's kind of counterbalanced by the fact that they're also more likely to get reproductive health care. So that's something that I've seen a lot in especially high-risk samples, is that there can be a high level of risk that is kind of juxtaposed with a high level of protective behavior as well. And that seems to be operating for the girls in the sample, but not for the boys. So there were several things that predicted receiving reproductive health care among females, including having partners of both genders, but also a higher grade in school, four or more sex partners, history of pregnancy, and being in a school with a school-based health center. And again, overall, males were less likely than females to receive care. Okay, so the second slide that I forgot to include was my limitation slide, so forgive me, but I'll just go over that verbally. Our study is a cross-sectional study, and all the responses are based on self-report. So, like for example, when girls who say they've only had female partners are talking about intercourse, we don't really know what they're talking about because we didn't define these specifically. We were in a situation where we felt we needed to ask the questions as unobtrusively as possible, and we based them on the YRBS. The measure of sexual identity is behavioral and certainly does not capture everything there is to capture with respect to sexual identity. It's a very concrete measure. But some of the students that say they've only had opposite sex partners may go on to have same-sex partners as well. Some may have not have reported that they had same-sex partners, so there could be some muddiness in that variable. And the behaviors weren't specifically or explicitly defined, so that's a caveat with respect to, you know, what it is that they're reporting. But the things I take away from this are that the males that are reporting both gender sex partners, they're also more likely to report more risk behavior, but they're not more likely to be doing the things that are protective. So this is a group that we've really missed. And I think to a degree, there's a couple things going on with that, but one is that not all of these youth are going to identify themselves as gay, and they're not going to identify themselves as heterosexual. So they'll get heterosexual-based teaching in their sex ed classes, like we heard earlier. But even the boys that are having sex with both boys and girls, they're not necessarily identifying themselves with gays. So there's kind of no place where they fit. And they're probably not getting intervention messages that are really tailored to their needs. And in general, the school-based health centers and other providers in the community do need to target males to increase their use of reproductive health care services. One of our interventions is to go out and find reproductive health care providers in the community so that the school nurses are able to refer kids that need reproductive health care to providers that are in the community. And when we went out and did that, we went out and went to these places. There really aren't a whole lot of places that are male-friendly. There's a whole bunch of stuff for girls. There's not that much for males. And I know there are some efforts out there to increase the attractiveness or to increase the utilization of reproductive health care services for males, but right at this point where we are, that's not happening so much. So they really do need to do a better job of that. And then we need to take into account the fact that not all of our kids are heterosexual when we are designing our interventions. We're targeting maybe 90% of our kids when we are designing our interventions, but we're not targeting the kids that are most likely to be at risk of pregnancy. And so we really need to be careful with our intervention messages. And the programs and curricula that are already in place need to be more sensitive to sexual minority youth needs. In the school district that we work in, there's a condom availability program. We'd like to see that program somehow be able to target the boys that are having sex with both gender partners to get them to increase their condom use. Also, the health ed is very heterosexually based, and that really does need to be updated. I know that the curriculum itself has been changed, but now it's a matter of training teachers and helping them to become more comfortable with delivering the health education material in a way that's not just heterosexually based. And we have a large staff and wonderful staff, and I would like to thank them all personally, but there's all their names. So thank you very much.